offerings and our gifts, and most of the country if they are here. This is a different letter of invitation for a receiver. So the business comes, and I can get engaged, you might have different approaches to the document. But at the end of the day, we must ensure that the policy benefits the people. We said by 2030, ICT will underpin the development of a dynamic and connected information society and a vibrant knowledge economy that is more inclusive and prosperous. And mainly, the objective of the ITC policy white paper is to foster an integrated approach on realizing the potential and benefits of the ICT for the South Africans. As we say, at the end of the day, we may have different approaches, agree to disagree, but at the end of the day, we must make sure that whatever we do will ultimately benefit the people. With those few remarks, let me hand over to the Secretary of the Committee to do apologies, if there is any. And before Minister opens with the remarks, I think we need to do introduction. You know, almost every meeting we have unfamiliar faces, so we mustn't take for granted that we know everyone. Secretary, over to you. Thank you very much.
Good morning, members. This morning we have apologies from Asketa Bartley and the Deputy Minister. Thank you.
Can you go for introduction? Then give Minister the opportunity to make opening remarks, then you go to the presentation after introduction. Thank you.
Good morning. Chairperson Minister Nkuna, I'm the Director General of the Department of Telecom.
Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, Alf Wiltz, DDPS.
Morning Chair and Honourable Members, my name is Omega Shelembe, DDG from DDPS.
Honourable Chair and Members, Zugile Nombete, Sita.
Honourable Chair and Minister, I'm Thuli Manzini, DDPS.
Honourable Chairperson and Minister, my name is Mlamli Boy from Centec.
Good morning, Chairperson, Minister and Members. I am Lumko Mtimde from USASA.
Morning, everybody. Cameron McKenzie, Portfolio Committee Member.
Good morning. My name is Marianne Shin.
Good morning. Nick Kornoff, Committee Member.
Good morning. Maguzo Landongeni, Committee Member.
Good morning. My name is Suela Elvis, Member of the Committee.
Good morning, I'm Dick Zodesi, Acting Chair of the Committee.
Good morning, Chair, members, Minister. My name is Jacob Midupi. I'm the content advisor for the committee.
Good morning, Hajira Sali, committee secretary.
Thank you. Thank you for all the introductions. We'll now turn over to the minister to do the opening remark on behalf of the department. You know, people who are here, it's an indication of the importance of the document. So everyone's listening attentively and taking notes. For those who are from the media, I think they'll listen attentively and do the right thing. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable members, thanks for invitation. As you know, the cabinet approved this policy in September last year, and we gazetted it, you know, immediately gazetted it. So it is the policy now which replaces every previous policy on the ICT. Chairperson, this new ICT white paper is fundamentally informed by the rights of the Constitution of non-discrimination. We may not ever afford again to discriminate those who are poor, those who are living in poorer sections of our society from access to ICT services. It is also, as you correctly put on your introduction, Chairperson, informed by our national development plan and the vision of forming an inclusive information society and a knowledge economy by 2030. It was against that backdrop then that we made policy choices as government on what needs to be the policy. For the first time, Chairperson, we are starting to introduce the measurement of the progress we make in the ICT so that we reduce the dependence of being assessed by international bodies on the progress we make. The SA has been working with our department to develop what is national ICT satellite accounts, which they produce and publish regularly. I'll encourage the members to continue to follow this because the statistics tell the truth of the state of our ICT in the country. So it is very important to follow this ICT national account. Of course, we continue to track some of the international indices like the World Economic Network Rating Indexes and the ITU Development Index in relation to ICT. We also follow many researchers who produce the information and data, but we want to rely on the national statistics from State SA. Of course, ICASA also is producing, is starting to produce annual reports on the state of ICT. They are also a useful document to read so that we understand whether are we making progress towards achieving our national development goals. Chairperson, it also brings the issue of leadership and active citizenry into the policy so that the citizens are just not spectators, but are active determinants of their destination. It introduced new systems of on how to improve universal access, and that's why, and it starts also to introduce the digital fund, which will be much broader than the current USAF fund, which is managed by USAF. It deals with elements of innovation because the changes are very rapid in this sector. And it is important to know that since 1994, the ICT sector is one of the growing sectors. I don't want to say it in front of Minister of Agriculture, but the ICT surpasses the contribution in the GDP, that one of agriculture as a whole. So it's quite a significant sector in our economy, and which is growing. the issues of innovation then and fair competition are going to become quite critical as we move forward and the policy deals with some of those things. We took a conscious decision to continue to ensure that the policy still uphold the principles of convergence of technologies. The important chapter is this one on the internet, because internet is the economy today. We are trying to look at the whole internet value chain in way we're dealing with this new policy, including the internet governance, the internet economy, and how the citizens, and actually, if you look some of the progress we've made as a country, we are doing very well in terms of internet exchange points. In South Africa, we've got multiple national exchange points in different cities, and we're continuing to expand it. And we're also assisting the rest of the continent in expanding these internet exchange points. This is very important, members, because if we continue to exchange our internet through our colonizers, like we used to do before, our internet exchange resting in Europe, it also adds to the cost to communicate. So we're very grateful that our industry is actually leading in establishing more internet exchange points and also assisting the African counterparts in establishing their own internet exchange points. Maybe just to add that we're very happy that the issues of domain names are also becoming quite critical. And I'm not sure whether there are people from our domain name agency here. They are becoming important to have your own domain names. Your cities, your families, but as a continent also we're trying to have our own domain names. I was very pleased that in February this year, Chairperson, one of the South African companies which applied for a tender to put .Africa domain name, which is a universal domain name for the whole of the continent, finally, and was awarded this, but challenged by someone in U.S., the courts in the U.S. Have ruled in favor of this company, ZACR, which is a South African company, to start producing this .Africa domain name. I'll encourage my extreme friend there from the left to consider his family domain name using .Africa instead of using .com.
Already done.
Oh, thank you. They are making progress, and I'm informed by that from July, I think, we may start applying for those names. They are still dealing with high-level domain names now. congratulations to Mr. Masilela and his team, who actually done a proud in this work. The Internet of Things is also dealt in this internet value chain, and more so because now we're facing this fourth industrial revolution. IoTs are becoming quite important. Every municipality is talking about smart cities. I'm talking about smart village where I come from because we don't have a city. So smart villages are going to be quite important to all of us. But it may be important that in the recent meeting we had in Rwanda, in the Smart Africa, that some of the satellite companies and international companies were wanting to actually to partner with us to start smart small cities, because it's very easy to start with big cities where there's infrastructure. And one actually promised to start a smart village pilot. So these are exciting things about the Internet of Things. Besides the issue of autonomous vehicles, which we discussed before, and other issues. On the issues of infrastructure, it is quite important. The two key things which are coming out of here is firstly our rapid deployment policy, which is aiming to really reduce the cost of deploying infrastructure.
and reconfirming the right of the operators to lay their infrastructure. In this respect, we have been going around speaking to our municipalities, speaking to national agencies to not see this deployment as a money-making machine, but as a means of development of our people and allow the operators who are currently considering the formation of the National Coordinate Committee to coordinate this activity, because it's very critical for our operators. Of course, it deals with the issue of networks and infrastructure, and introduces also what is called wireless open access network, including the fixed open networks. It then deals with the most important and critical issue, which is that one of spectrum and spectrum allocation in the new policy. Besides the supply side measures, we are also dealing with the demand side measures, which is very, very critical because the usage is still very low in South Africa. The issue of making sure that there's enough content for people to utilize internet and digital skills then come to the fore in this regard. Chairperson, we think this is the most important aspect, because if you track all the international indexes where we are compared to other countries, that's where we are lacking. We are making some progress in the infrastructure, but on the demand side, we are lacking. That's why, for instance, recently we have published certain strategies to complement this white paper. One of those is e-government, because most of the information people need is government. If you can make it available, then more people will be using internet to access it. So it will increase the uptake of the internet. The other aspect of the policies or strategies we are putting, that strategy is out there for public comment, and we hope to finalize soon. We publish them in March. It's a digital strategy for the country. It's called e-strategy. It's also out there. We'll also value the input from the members, if they can give us these inputs before we actually finalize policy in there. And more importantly, as a method of inclusion, we're looking at the SMME in this sector, ICT, support strategy to complement this policy. All those policies are up there for comment at the moment. Of course, they also deal with the policy also deals with the new approaches to the coastal sector in South Africa, and lastly, it also deals with the institutional arrangements. I thought I should just give that background to the members. Of course, the members will be keen on the implementation. We'll try and elaborate extensively on this tomorrow, because we continue to have meetings and engagement with our operators and other ICT stakeholders on how best we must implement this policy. Thank you very much, Shepherd.
Thank you very much, Minister. So we'll now hand over to DG to lead us with the presentation.
Good morning once again, Chairperson, members, Honorable Minister. I think the Minister has already set the tone of what we're going to be presenting here. Now, let me indicate that these policies align with the NDP vision, and in fact, it arises because of the NDP itself. We envisage that this policy will last at most until 2030 and possibly beyond some aspects of policy. So in other words, this is a medium and somehow long-term policy, to say. On page 2, we deal with the table of contents of what is contained in policy in the white paper. The first issue is about the stages that we followed, the stages of consultation, followed by a new policy, what is covered in the white paper, that is the vision of the policy. And we present graphically the stages of policy making. We then turn to universal service and access, innovation and fair competition, the internet, which is the new gold, if not the new platinum, in fact. And then the next area deals with the open access, what the minister referred to, which is mainly around infrastructure and supply issues. The digital society, which deals with demand-side issues, ICT industry growth, and institutional frameworks, as indicated. In the subsequent graphic presentation, we indicate the process followed to finalize this policy. Chairperson, I need to indicate that this was the one of the most elaborate consultative process, spanning quite many years, in fact 3 years to be precise, of formulating and finalizing policy. It all started in 2013 when the framing paper was gazetted, and in the framing paper, if members will remember, questions were asked in terms of what must go into policy. So that was the first stage of formulating this policy. Then the green paper started to zero into specific issues that were emerging from the first phase of consultation. A discussion paper was issued in November 2014, and simultaneously, a representative panel was created to assist the department with the finalization of policy, and that culminated in the adoption and gazetting of the white paper in September, October 2016. So in brief, this are the stages of policy making in this case. Now, in terms of the vision, what is contained in this white paper? As the minister indicated, this white paper replaces the previous white papers. There were three white papers before this. One, the 1996 white paper on telecommunications policy, the 1999 the broadcasting policy white paper, and I will explain the broadcasting issue, why we excluded it, and the postal policy white paper. Now, the broadcasting area is being handled separately through the other department, the Department of Communications, through the broadcasting policy review. So what we have here deals with telecommunications and postal services, but there were extensive engagements with the Department of Communications to ensure that even though this policies are happening at different levels, different time intervals, there is still alignment to take into consideration the implications of convergence. The policy outlines the overarching framework for transforming South Africa into an inclusive and innovative digital society. In short, it speaks to uptake and usage by all South Africans, irrespective of who they are, where they reside, their status, and so forth. Now, the interventions proposed in this policy in summary include, one, the promotion of universal service and access, framework for building a digital society, new policy approaches to address supply side and infrastructure rollout issues, new approaches to scarce resources such as spectrum and numbers, new approach to the postal sector, frameworks to increase ICT industry growth and transformation in the sector, and lastly, the institutional frameworks as indicated. The emphasis is that of uptake and usage by all in society. And now we have divided this into four classes of issues. The first issue deals with supply side measures. Now, as indicated, the supply side measure deals with an open access regime at two levels. The first level is the creation of the wholesale open access network that I'll refer to ensure that those who cannot invest in infrastructure can still play in the industry. The second aspect of the open access regime now deals with the imposition of open access principles and requirements on all holders of radio frequency spectrum, even if they are not the wholesale open access network. Then it also deals with the allocation of the radio frequency spectrum, which we'll elaborate in detail tomorrow when the minister presents the budget vote of the department, but some of the issues may even arise in this engagement. Rapid deployment has already been referred to, a new licensing framework, and indeed the internet, which we see as the new platinum for the South African economy going forward. on the demand side issues, we talk about the digital transformation of government. It's important to emphasize that government should lead by example. Without government leading by example, it will be difficult for society to use ICTs. So we see government playing a catalytic role in the uptake and usage of ICTs. The next issue is digital access to promote trust and security in the use of ICTs. This speaks to cybersecurity, which is one of the priorities of the department, as we indicated when we presented our APPs. Digital inclusion to create an enabling environment to promote e-commerce. This speaks to the e-strategy in part. And on the postal sector reform, this is also very important for us and is currently one of the priorities of the department. It defines the new role of the postal sector and the South African Post Office with more emphasis on universal access and the uptake and usage of ICTs by the postal sector. It delineates a new market structure, competition and licensing issues in the postal environment, and I'll elaborate on that. The expansion of the role and obligations of the Post Bank. I need to indicate that in this case, emphasis is on the role of the Post Bank in the payments of social grants amongst other government services. So the Post Bank, besides being the bank of the unbanked, is also envisaged or expected to play a lead role in this regard. So Cabinet has already taken a decision that the Post Bank and indeed the Post Office should play a role in the payment of social grants. My apology in the next blog, which is supposed to speak to the institutional framework. As we indicated when we presented our APP, this speaks to the establishment of the new regulator, the creation of a digital development fund to replace the current USASA, and the rationalization of the state infrastructure companies. My apology for the mistype in that area. Then we move to, so what I've indicated now covers chapter 1 up to chapter 4 in summary. Now, with respect to universal service and access, we have observed the following challenges, Chairperson, that in a digital society, universal access to communication services is not just a tool to address inequality across, but also a precondition for equality. Secondly, that digital divide persists in our society and we need to respond adequately through policy and other means. Duplication and lack of alignment in institutional framework and roles. As members are aware that we have multiple agencies that are all involved in the rollout of universal service and universal access. Overemphasis on subsidizing network extension. And now on key principles of universal access. What must underpin universal access and service in South Africa? Is that number one, the networks and services should be available, should be affordable, should be accessible, there should be awareness, and our people should have the ability, and this in part speaks to a skills revolution that we want to unleash. Then there is an issue of quality of services, which is quite pertinent as one of the key principles. Now, in terms of the policy interventions related to universal service and access, the first issue is that the minister is responsible for policy formulation on universal service and access. It's very important to clarify that the regulatory functions of USASA are transferred to the new regulator. Now, what you see currently is that, to an extent, USASA in terms of the ECA has some regulatory mandates that includes the definition of needy persons, the definition of other service areas, but also a funding mandate on the other end. So what we're trying to do here is to refocus USASA to be a fund and to transfer all the regulatory functions that are currently carried by USASA to the new regulator. Now, the minister indicated that up to now also when it comes to funding, the focus has been on infrastructure funding. So USASA has been intervening in the main on the supply side of the industry. The new digital fund is going to have an expanded mandate so that it can also support SMMEs on the demand side of the market. Evolve universal service obligation to incorporate broadband connectivity. Framework on consumer protection to be set and regularly reviewed. this is a very critical issue, and it links with the quality of service principle that I referred to earlier on. I've already made reference to the future of USASA that is going to be transformed into a new entity. In Chapter 6, we deal with innovation and fair competition. That one of the challenges that as much as we have licensed many companies, the reality of the situation in South Africa is that you have what you call an oligopoly, where you have fewer companies that control the market. And we believe, out of the engagements that we have had with stakeholders, that there is still scope for others to participate in this market, with more emphasis on service-based competition. Now, in terms of the key objectives, is to ensure that there is effective competition throughout the value chain of the market. In terms of the policy interventions, the first thing is around market reviews, that the regulator must still prescribe markets that require intervention. Now, since the advent of the ECA in 2005, the regulator has only defined one market out of so many markets, and that is the coal termination market. To an extent, it made some significant impetus on the industry in terms of prices. We saw CLC responding by reducing prices. But because we are focusing on one market, what we saw, the big ones did not respond to what CLC was trying to do. And as a result, CLC has gone back to increase prices. So what this means, Chairperson, is that when you focus on one market and leave other markets, then you will not be solving a problem. So the emphasis here is that at some point, we should have gone through all the markets. I've made reference to strengthening the regulator, including the memorandum of understanding or cooperation with the Competition Commission. We want to ensure that this MOU is something that is mandated in law. Currently, there is an MOU between ICASA and the Competition Commission. But during on the Vodacom Neotel matter, there was confusion in terms of who was going to do what between the two entities. So we want to find a way of dealing with that issue. And together working with the Competition Commission also on measures and acquisitions, because we are beginning to see a lot of consolidation that is taking place in this with severe implications for competition. Now, on the internet, as the minister indicated in great detail, that this is a new area of focus, and our clearing call as the department is that the internet for all. And internet for all means that all South Africans must be able to access and use high-speed, high-quality internet services. So that is what, excuse me, we're trying to do in this regard. Other policy interventions include net neutrality. What this means is that we want to encourage innovation, that those who can use the internet for a range of interventions must be allowed to do so. The owners of infrastructure should not use the fact that they own infrastructure to stop innovations in the internet value chain. And we will speak to this perhaps in the discussion. There is an issue around the hosting of data centers in South Africa, that presently most of the data centers where information is stored are not located in our country. And this has implications for long-term security of our country. Search and navigation services, we're all on Gmail, we use Gmail, we use Facebook, there are no local innovations. And these are some of the issues that we want to attend to. Of course, working with industry and other stakeholders. Electronic numbering is one area of focus of policy. The numbers that we use are not up to infinite. At some point, we run out of numbers. So we need to take advantage of the internet and introduce new numbers, you know, what is called e-numbering. Now, when we came to present our APP, there was a question around internet governance, whether government should even bother about this its participation on internet governance, or it should be left to the private sector. We believe that government at the national, at the continental, and at the multilateral level has a role to play in internet governance, and we sketch the details of how that can be done. Now, in Chapter 9, we deal with infrastructure and supply side issues, the open access policy. As we indicated, there is no competition on the supply side of the market. As much as we have Vodacom, Telkom, Cell C, MTN. There are still barriers to entry on the supply side of the market, and that's where we want to intervene to ensure that there is a competition downstream. Now, the key principles that go with that is to ensure that there is effective competition. Amongst others, we'll continue with the principles that are in the current legislation. One, the principle of transparency, non-discrimination. So those principles will continue and will be carried forth. And specifically, in terms of what is new in this regard, is the introduction of the Wholesale Open Access Network, which will or can be a public, private sector owned and managed entity. Now, we need to emphasize here that if the public sector want to be part of this, then the public sector can be part of the Wholesale Open Access Network. But what is more material to emphasize is that this is not a state-owned company. It's something that's going to be created by companies, which may include both the private sector and the public sector. Now, when we presented our APP, we indicated that if, for example, the IDC want to be part of the Wholesale Open Access Network as an investor, we cannot say no to that. But the point to make is that this is not a state-owned company as often misconstrued in other areas. The regulator is going to play a very important role in the licensing of the Wholesale Open Access Network. As the minister indicated, there are engagements that have been ongoing with the regulator and with the industry as a whole. Still on the on Chapter 9, the challenges noted in policy include unclear roles and responsibilities, especially between ICASA and the minister. We believe that must be resolved and clarified. There are gaps in the spectrum management regime that currently prevails in our country. An exclusive spectrum regime which promotes economic growth for a few market players at the expense of broader socio-economic development. We have dealt with this issue that at the heart of this transformation or radical transformation is to use the spectrum as a tool, as a leverage to ensure that we open opportunities to others who want to enter the market. The key principles there are indicated. One, maximizing the efficiency of spectrum use in South Africa, promoting openness, transparency and non-discrimination, infrastructure sharing, application of use it or lose it principle to spectrum, and this will require serious capacity of the regulator to be able to do this, because most of the time we find that operators have more information than the regulator, and then the regulator cannot deal with this issue. Then there are issues around the predictability and certainty of policy to ensure that we can attract investment into our country. In terms of intervention, we need a new clear framework that sets clear roles and responsibilities of the minister, sector regulator, and other agencies that are involved in this. Alignment of national universal service objectives and spectrum licensing. We need to deal with the issue of spectrum fees that are already contained in this policy. Spectrum trading on high-demand spectrum is permissible. Trading of high-demand spectrum is not permissible. So it means that the spectrum that has been classified as high-demand cannot be traded between industry players. But that spectrum that has been designated as non-high-demand can be traded, but subject to the rules that are defined and set in policy. All high-demand spectrum to be assigned on an open access basis, whether to the Wholesale Open Access Network or to other industry players, and this will be clarified in the discussion tomorrow in some detail. Now, still on Chapter 9 on infrastructure and supply side issues, rapid deployment policy has been indicated by the minister that it remains the priority of this policy. We need to make some movements in this regard. And we have vested interest even as government, because we are starting to roll out SA Connect, and we need this policy to also enable that. But we also want to facilitate for industry players to roll out infrastructure without difficulties. There are engagements that are ongoing between the department and ICASA to expedite this process, and in the near future we'll be going to the minister with a recommendation that may go to cabinet for approval before we can fully implement this. But a lot of work is being done in this regard. On the digital society, which deals with demand-side issues. Challenges that have been noted in policy include lack of synchronization in approaches to digital transformation adopted by different government departments, which results in overlaps, duplication of costs, and unnecessary expenditure, and even capacity across government to the rollout of digital solutions and services, and even access across society to skills and capacity to meaningfully engage with ICTs and take advantage of the opportunities that are there. It will serve to emphasize here the issue of massification of skills, and when we discuss, we'll also explain in great details what we intend doing in terms of a massification of skills, what the minister calls skilling the nation. Content and service available on the internet is predominantly in English and produced outside South Africa. There is a need to deal with demand-side issues by getting especially young people to play a significant role in the generation of content, especially content that is generated in African languages. The key objectives, Chairperson members, are indicated there. And in terms of the policy intervention, we have three pillars that are noted or that are enshrined in policy. Pillar one deals with digital transformation of the public service. I've already made reference to e-government. Now, the minister made reference to the e-government strategy that we are currently consulting on with stakeholders within and outside e-government. The most important observation to make is that e-government is taking place in South Africa. There are a number of initiatives, but the challenge is that those are not coordinated, they are not interoperable. So what we are trying to do with this strategy is to ensure that we have a coordinated approach to e-government to also manage the little resources that we have. The other pillar is digital access, which is to promote trust in ICT platforms and networks, and this deals with cyber security. A lot of work is being done in this regard, and we'll elaborate. In digital inclusion, government will create an enabling environment that extends reliable access to communications networks, boosting adoption of new technologies through digital government services as indicated, promote digital awareness and literacy as indicated, and protect users from cybercrime, which is one of the key areas of focus, as we already indicated. Now, with regard to the postal policy, we believe that the postal sector and indeed the post office and its constituent elements have a big role to play in this regard, in promoting universal access not only to the postal sector but to the ICT sector as a whole. Now, in terms of the key objectives, one, this is to it deals with the restructuring of the post office to contribute towards universal access to ICTs. As we all know that the post office has around 2,400 facilities or infrastructure or outlets throughout the country, and those can be used to promote universal access to ICTs and also for the purposes of driving electronic commerce in South Africa. The policy also provides a definition of postal services and the scope of the postal sector, provides an approach to universal access as already indicated, expand the role and obligations of the post bank to include the payments of social grants and other government grants, define a new national address system, set out a framework for the stamp advisory committee, and provide a regulatory framework for the extraterritorial offices of exchange. Just to explain this, the first issue is about the national address system, which is very pertinent for the role of the post office. At present, the post office is engaging with the IEC, for example, in the wake of the challenges that were experienced in Clockware. We have asked the post office to start engaging with the IEC so that those kind of challenges can be addressed. So a new national addressing system forms a cornerstone of the transformation of the postal sector. We also deal with the issue of the extraterritorial offices of exchange. These are entities that are established by multinational companies that also operate in South Africa. So there is a new regulatory framework. For most of the time, the post office has been coming to Parliament to complain about this, but for the first time, we now have clear policy on how we're going to deal with it. Now, in terms of the ICT industry growth, we look at the value chain of the ICT industry. In the main, we're looking at electronics and hardware manufacturing. A lot of work is going to be done in this regard, and this will include engagement with industry. We learned recently, Chairperson, that there are so many blacks who want to venture into this area. And most of the time what they will do, they will go to the big companies to introduce their products. And in one discussion, in the presence of the minister, we learned that many black people who want to enter this part of the industry are finding it difficult to do so. There are now interventions that will come as part of the SMME strategy to deal with this. We'll also attend to software development and also the services industry through the Wholesale Open Access Network, amongst others, and we'll detail the kind of interventions that will go with this. On the institutional frameworks, I've already indicated that while we're working on the new regulator, the development fund, SOC rationalization, we dealt with the same way we presented our APPs, so I'll not go into it. Chairperson, in short, this is the summary of the policy, and as indicated, this is a kind of a medium-term policy going forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DG. Members, there's a presentation. Can we engage? And Minister has alluded to the fact that our input will be very important to the finalization of the document. So I think our inputs and comments will serve as input to the document. Thank you very much. Can we have him? Honourable Korenoff, Honourable Mackenzie, Honourable Shin, Honourable Suela, Honourable Ndongeni, in that order. Thank you. Oh, by the way, Honourable Korenoff is a new member of the committee. So that will be the maiden question. Yeah?
I don't know whether it's appropriate for me to go first then, because, you know, maybe I should keep quiet and first listen to my fellow peers who've been here longer. But can I just, you know, I've got a few questions, and may I firstly thank the minister and thank the DG for the presentation. I think it is, unfortunately, you know, vital to the growth of South Africa. If we fail here, we will fail in terms of economic growth. There's no doubt about that. So let me wish you all the best. Firstly, on the Post Bank, is there any timeline when they will be ready to take over the payment of social grants? You know, are we talking 1 year, 2 years, 3 years? Then secondly, I don't see anything in the white paper that mentioned the fourth industrial revolution. I know it's a little bit of science matter, but you know, internet is science and technology is science, so I think it is important that we take cognizance of that. You know, the digital divide is definitely enemy number one in South Africa. If you see what's happening in the metros and you see what's happening in the rural South Africa, that is our enemy number one. And when for the fourth industrial revolution upon us, you know, we cannot allow that rural South Africa missing out on that. You know, that will just be absolutely a catastrophe. Then finally, you know, even politicians have realized that now, that if you do a stupid posting on Facebook or a terrible tweet, it can end your career. But it can end your career even if you're an MD of a company. If you're an ordinary South African and you do stupid things, it can end, it can change your life. Now, I just want to know whether the time has not arrived, and I don't know whether they do that, in the life skills program at school level, that we must definitely include something about telecommunications. How do you go about in terms of that? And also about, you can include, you know, cyber crime, so that we at least at that young level, we start to tell people, you know, how to deal with social media and cyber crime. I don't know whether it's part of life skills programs, but I think this department must engage with the Department of Education to make sure if it's not. And then finally, I think this committee probably has mentioned that. And that is when you know, it doesn't affect me because I've got a very nice bundle from my service provider in terms of data. So, you know, when I can afford it, no problem. But if I cannot afford it, and I'm a pay-as-you-go, and I buy my data and I don't use it, it's over. I buy 1 gig and it's over at the end of the month if I haven't used it. Now that is affecting the poor, full stop. It is just affecting the poor. And I don't know whether we have any policy or any interaction to make sure that the service providers, you know, do take care of the pay-as-you-goers, that you don't lose that data, because that is an important tool. Maybe, you know, this was addressed by this committee previously, but I have not seen anything in the media that is going to stop. Thank you.
Honourable McKenzie.
Thank you, Chairperson, and what a valuable input from the Honourable Kernoff for a maiden contribution. Just in terms of the post office, the post bank's role in the distribution of social grants, we had the CEO before the committee several times who emphasised how important the social grant distribution was to the future sustainable financial survival of the post office, literally survival. And he was given, as far as I understand it, from the day he arrived, almost an assurance from various role players, including the minister, that the post bank or the post office would be considered very favorably when it came to distributing social grants through their network. Events have overtaken us, and we've seen that the post office, in fact, wasn't awarded distribution rights for social grants. They also, there were two or three tenders that they were not successful at getting government business, and I believe the 30% proposal that was tabled before cabinet as well and accepted, the 30% of government business would be redirected through the post office, also hasn't materialized. So my question, I have two questions. The first is, in terms of the distribution of social grants, what authority does this ICT white paper and any policy that we're able to make as a department have on social services and that department when it comes to allocating those distribution rights? There are vested interests with, as we've seen in the media, with cash paymaster services and the department being given cash paymaster services being given that contract again or that tender again. So how realistic is it that the post bank will get that distribution, and obviously when will it happen? And what kind of role do you envisage for the post? Is it exclusive? Is it cooperative with other players? Then just looking at the proposals in the white paper, some of which are very good, by the way, there's going to be a lot of legislative changes required to implement those. When do you see this legislation coming down the line? Because obviously that has to happen before you can implement any of the steps proposed. And I'm thinking specifically of USASA and the Digital Development Fund. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Honourable Shin.
Thank you, Chairperson. The most controversial part, to put it this way, there's a lot of good ideas in this policy, and I mean, there was a lot of public input over many years, and the drafts of the policy were great, but what took everybody by surprise was the detail of the wireless open access network, details of which were not subjected to public participation. Why was it not subjected to public participation? I mean, some members of the review panel for the policy didn't even know these details and were surprised to read them in the Government Gazette. So I wanted them to know why that was not included for public participation. Also, the study trip to Mexico at the end of last year to look at their wireless open network, why was there no report back, no written report on what you learnt there? Because the intention of the trip to study their network, which has taken 5 years to establish and only just getting off the ground, was to look at the role of the new regulator, lessons learnt from introducing the network, and public-private partnership models. Now, in a follow-up question to that, you said no official report was compiled after the Mexico visit in December 2016. So why, if you went to study all these things, did you learn absolutely nothing that you could put down on paper that would influence the one? It wasn't just a jolly, because it would seem so, at a cost of, what was it, 600 odd thousand? So, you know, one would want to know why you learned nothing from the Mexico model, because that is obviously what we were told when the Gazette was published, that, you know, this network was based on Mexico, and you hadn't even seen it. You hadn't even had a discussion on it, according to your parliamentary answers. Is the, you talk about investors in the WOAN. What is the expected cost of establishing the WOAN? You must have done some kind of financial modeling. And what would be the economic value of the WOAN for investors such as the IDC? And maybe even the PRC, that's asked all the public sector pension fund. Would they be interested in it and why? The priority legislation that we've outlined and that's been outlined in the budget does not include the rapid deployment guidelines. Why is that? You talk about the Digital Development Fund and you talk about the economic regulator, but there's no, in the budget thing, there is no mention of prioritizing the rapid deployment guidelines. I mean, those didn't even need to be included in this policy. They were ready to go some time beforehand. Then the Digital Development Fund. What is the expected income from the minimum 1% levy that you're going to be putting on network companies in 2020? And did you actually determine whether this was affordable for the network companies and the impact it would have on their financial sustainability? Minister, you recently had a meeting with the CEO of Vodafone. What assurances did you give him regarding the security of his investment in South Africa's mobile market, pending the integration, shall we put it politely, of Vodacom into the WOAN. Can you also then please tell us what settlement terms ICASA has set out for settling the Spectrum court case? I believe your lawyers have actually asked for their settlement terms. Can you please tell us what those are and what the status of this court case is? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and let me also welcome the presentation. Indeed, the department regards the white paper as containing policies that will improve access to modern communication and postal infrastructure and services for all, also improve the ability of all citizens to meaningful participation in the digital economy and simplify the regulatory regime to foster competition and make it easier to comply. Quite commendable. But then I would like to know that given the financial constraints that the department has, how will the department ensure the fulfillment of all the recommendations made within the white paper within the allotted time frame? And again, the white paper stated that USASA will be dissolved and that USAF will be transformed into a new digital development fund responsible for providing support to achieve the objectives set out. What has been the success of USAF? What are the implications of this change or the name changing and keeping its unsuccessful staff in the new regulator? Again, the last question, the second one would be, two forms of regulators are envisaged. I would like to know what will happen actually to the CASA. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Minister and the Department, many of the policies cannot be implemented before changes have been made to legal regulator framework. How will the minister and department ensure a smooth transition to the new policy framework? Thank you.
Thank you very much. I also have one or two questions here. That the presentation talks about the promotion of trust. To what extent can we, you know, ensure the effectiveness of this promotion when on the other side we have this escalating, you know, tendency of cybersecurity, the threat that we experience from the cybersecurity? And coming to SMMEs, every time when we engage the department or the entities, we always raise a concern of dissatisfaction in terms of the growth of SMMEs. Now we have information again today that many blacks approach big industry, they have difficulty in accessing the market. Are there any strategies that the department will apply to make sure that all people have access to the market? Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. I want to be in order. Thank you, Sir President. Thank you, Honorable Members, for your input. And welcome, Honorable Koronov, to the committee. Your questions are quite pertinent. And I fully agree with you that the ICTs are key to our growth and future growth. And more so in the face of the fourth industrial revolution, as you have said. the payment of grants, the policy just states a policy. But what I hear, the members are more interested in the current challenge of SASA, Social Security Agency, and the payment. The members know very well the court, the highest court has made a decision. What is the post office and SASA are doing at the moment is to find a method of assisting SASA to carry over this function. But what would be key, because the funds are distributed through SASA, is for SASA to either formalize the arrangement with the post office or complete the tender as soon as possible, because we've got only 12 months to fulfill this mandate. I don't think we can afford a situation where we don't comply with the court ruling. So I'm aware, but I won't give details. I'm aware the South African Post Office, my department, and the Social Development Department, they are engaging on this thing. And my prayer is that those engagements must result in a decision first being made by SASA, and the Post Office is ready to assist with the distribution of the social grant. I'll end that one there. Yes, the fourth industrial revolution, what it is. But if you look at the policy, some of the details I spoke about, the Internet of Things, the rapid changes in technology, it's about the revolution in terms of technology advancement. And how this technological advancement, in my own view, results in fusion between the physical and the biological matter, and which is giving this exponential change in the utilization of ICT and science for the development. So, to a certain extent, although he didn't mention this term fourth industrial revolution, because it's only been coined, I think, in the last 2 years by the leader of WEF at the World Economic Forum. It doesn't space, but if you look at the principles which are in the policies, they are embracing what is in the
in the fourth revolution. because it's got so much impact. We are engaging as government, as a whole, to see how best we can prepare South Africa to be part of this revolution, because we don't want a digital divide. It's the same thing President Mandela warned us about more than 10 years ago, to say that we must always prevent this emerging digital divide. The officials would deal extensively with the issues of social media and how do we protect our citizens from cybercrime. The thrust of it, honorable members, is that despite certain isolated incidences of mishap in the internet, the benefits of internet far outweighs the disadvantages we face today. So that's why we're still encouraging our citizens to use internet and exploit it for their development. But at the same time, we've put institutions within our department to assist the citizens to surf the net in a safe manner. We are also looking at other additional measures to further protect the citizens from the abuse. Of course, the policy is not regulating social media per se at this stage, but our policy discussions, which are going to the governing parties conference, they deal extensively with that. And as we move on, then we may incorporate those. The key challenge is that we must educate our citizens not to do things, as you are correctly saying, which are wrong on the internet. The policy talks about the right to be forgotten. Because sometimes you put things you wish they can just disappear. But we are putting that as one of the policies that in South Africa we should allow people to remove certain aspects in the internet after following certain processes. It's a very important right to be forgotten, because sometimes you do stupid things maybe when you're young or when you have taken certain things and you really wish those things don't follow you anymore. So that's what the policy is, because policy is a general framework which deals with that. But the members will also know that we are continuing to increase our capacity of our National Cybersecurity Hub. That's the only framework we have as government to interact with civil society, to interact with business, small businesses, and our youth, to advise them. They've carried quite a number of awareness programs. The officials may like to just reflect on that. The loss of data, ask the officials to deal with that. The current regulation, in my view, they already prevent that. This disappearing of the current ICASA regulation already in place and are dealing with that. What we need is the monitoring of it. The same as the regulation to be transparent about the cost. If you travel, if you buy your cell phone or sign a contract, they must tell you upfront and not hide the cost. They must tell you upfront all the costs in your contract. So what is needed now is to monitor whether those things, those regulations, are actually being adhered to. But the officials may just say to them, Honorable McKenzie, or you raised the issue of the social grants too, and the 30% government set aside. And saying, what authority do we have on? We are a government. The policy is for the whole of government. And once the policy is in place, it should apply across. But I think I've answered you. In government, in terms of procurement practices, that's why we need to align government policies. It depends on who is a procurer. Now, in terms of SASA Act, the SASA is supposed to be carrying on this responsibility or outsource them on their behalf until they've got the capacity. So that's why we've worked very hard as a South African Post Office to demonstrate to both SASA and the court that we do have the capacity to distribute the social grant. But as I said, we are waiting in SASA to make the decision, and our prayer is that that decision can be made soon. the legislation, when is it coming? Honourable members, the legislative process is quite an exhaustive, but our officials have already started making certain drafts. They have to share these drafts with the rest of other government departments to make sure that there's alignment, after which they will have to engage the state law advisors to certify whether the policies are in line with the constitution and the laws. And also we must do what is called socio-economic impact with the monitoring and evaluation department. We think these processes will be concluded towards the end of this financial year, hopefully by December or March latest, so that we can start introducing the legislation. Our engagement with the industry is clear from the industry that we should implement the policy without delay. So we're working flat out, but following the due processes in developing the legislation. My friend, Honorable Shen, thank you for your questions too. You are saying the one was not part of the consultation and my study to Mexico was it a jolly trip and things like that. No, it was not a jolly trip. No, I'm answering you now. I've written a written response to your question extensively. Your question, yeah, I've got it. You asked whether there was a report written on my trip to Mexico on one, and what are the lessons from it? And my answer was that there was no report, and what impact of those lessons to the established to the policy on one. I did state to you that my trip to Mexico was at the end of November or early December. I can't remember. It was months after we've completed the policy, so it didn't have any impact. I'm still answering. I want to answer you because I took time to write those responses, but because you have asked them, I want to answer you to your satisfaction. It was months after we've concluded the policy. The policy was in place. It was not to inform us whether we should have it in the policy or not have it in the policy. What we went to Mexico for? First, we went to Mexico for Internet Governance Forum, Global One. That was the main reason we went to Mexico. And we were leading the African group after hosting the African Regional Internet Governance Forum in Durban. So that was the main. But because we were already in Mexico, instead of wasting state resources, we piggyback on that trip to interact with the government of Mexico to understand how did they deal with their wireless open access network. We did that. So I'm correct that you say there was no formal report. We're trying to understand how did they deal with it. Yes, we did understand it. They do have open access, wireless open access network. They informed us it was working. It was working for them. That's what the government of Mexico said. But their system is a little bit different from ours. Their system was different because it was driven by the citizens who were complaining about lack of services in the underserved area. And fortunately, all their MPs, they are concerned about the poor citizens. There was general agreement among all parties that matter should be addressed. That's why they managed to put it in their constitution. So we know that. That's how they approach it. So it is in their constitutional provisions that there should be that open access network. We also heard from them that it has helped reduce the cost. There were huge incumbents in Mexico who were monopolizing so now more players are starting to enter into that market. That's what they told us about what and many other things. So we fully understand. Mexico is not the only place we mentioned that they, when we're explaining about this policy, that is the only place which is have for to open access network. Last year, during the World Economic Forum in Rwanda, we also piggyback on that visit, where we are accompanying Deputy President, to interact with government of Rwanda. And they did also inform us that it was working there because they faced the same conditions we are facing in South Africa, where no one was prepared to invest robust broadband infrastructure in the small towns, dorpies, and rural areas. Even in the recent trip we had, they still confirmed it is working. So I'm just saying our interactions with government so that we understand, so that we can tailor things as we implement also for our own purposes. But there was nothing to learn more than to say how they implemented and how it arose, because we already had our policy, which was agreed by government. Coming back to your... So it was not a jolly trip, madam. You talk about economic impact of one. I don't know. No one has done the impact study yet. But what I know, that the SMMEs who are currently excluded are very excited about it. That's what I definitely know, because I interact with stakeholders in the industry. They see it as the last hope for them to play, to be significant player in this market and introduce competition. I know the big operators who are not having live spectrum licenses, they are excited about it. So, but I don't know what will be the economic impact of it at the end, because that, no one has done that. It will maybe be done in the future as we implement it. The rapid deployment guidelines. As I said, what we are doing at the moment as part of the implementation, we have to first finalize the implementation plan. The implementation plan was supposed to be in place by, in our plans to, by end of March. But because of the consultation we have been having, we hope to finalize that soon. And we'll be giving the details of that maybe tomorrow when we finalize the consultation with the industry. there was a question about the fund, 1%. Is it affordable? Maybe the officials can deal with that. But I'll answer the one, my meeting with Vodafone CEO. And what is the impact on investment? That's just one. Maybe let me first dispose the court case. I've answered this question also to other workshops, but I'll answer it again. The court cases are still on. The question was asked whether have we engaged the regulator ICASA on this. Yes, we have engaged ICASA. The first meeting was late, I think in December last year, where we're engaging them on the implementation of the white paper, which is existing now. In the same meeting, we did raise that we have to start engaging on the issue of court case, because it is a court case of two state entities. And it's our belief we can, as two state entities, we should try and avoid unnecessary expenditure of state resources and deal with matters internally. But the court case is still on. There's nothing withdrawn. We're still engaging the regulator, as we have said. That one ends there. Vodafone CEOs. I meet a lot of CEOs, Comrade Chief.
Honorable
Comrade. I know you are his comrade and not my comrade. Okay. Okay, I withdraw that. Honorable Shim. I'm sad that you're not a comrade, by the way. But let me ask I interact with a lot of CEOs, almost on a regular basis. I interact particularly with those who have invested in South Africa and are operators or potential operators on a regular basis. Just recently, on last Friday, I interacted with the new CEO of MTN South Africa. Good discussion. I interact with the CEO of Vodacom South Africa on a regular basis, the CEO of Telkom South Africa, and others, of course, Cell C and others. Because we believe it is important to listen and also engage. What was the key in my engagement with the new Vodafone CEO, if I can remember clearly, yes, was that it happened after the major events happened in our countries, just before we had the downgrade. But I still remember what he said very clearly, because he is a business. Well, that Vodafone is a company which is not looking at short-term issues in South Africa. It's looking at long-term. Their investment horizon is long-term, like most of the telecoms. So they were not very much concerned about those recent events there, because they are long-term investors. Yes, it did engage, of course, on the when, and gave some proposals like any other company. We continue to listen to those proposals. but in terms of future prospects of Vodafone, you are seeing a possibility. He also, as a CEO, showed commitment to the success of one. But of course, all operators are appealing for spectrum. So those were one of the things we get from all the CEOs, including to Vodafone CEO. But you are very optimistic about South Africa. It's not a short-term intervention. It's a long-term investment when you put this type of investment. Comrade Suela, you are a comrade. Oh, Honorable Suela. Thank you for your inputs too. I think your question was, yes, we've got small resources. We're a very small department. Even other machines know our budget is just so much. But we have to implement this policy. The way we do the implementation, that's why we have set up some of these national structures and fora for consultation, because they do really assist us as a method of how best we implement these policies and strategies we put in the ICT sector. These forums may be time consuming, but it's not a waste of time. You remember 2 years ago or 2.5 years, 1.5 years ago, we launched this National ICT Forum. It's got various chambers, and they are all very active in the implementation of this policy. if you check, for instance, the disability chamber of that forum, it's dealing with critical issues of access for the people with disability. And they've been very supportive of this new white paper. But they are very much concerned about cost of assistive devices. And we are working with them to see how best we implement some of those policies. The cybersecurity and chamber of it, they've been working with our National Cyber Hub, and they've been increasing awareness during the awareness week last year. And they continue to increase awareness to the public, to the general public. So those are the very, very key issues. the other chamber has been dealing with our e-commerce engagements and how to expand the e-commerce. And lastly, the economic one, chamber, has been dealing with this white paper, the engagements we've been having with the industry. They've been playing quite a leading role, and we'll be reporting that once we finalize this engagement tomorrow. So we may not have all the resources, but you use these instruments we have created to help us with the implementation. Some of the councils we have, like the BE Council, they are doing a sterling job. Yes, we don't have enough funding for them, but they are doing good jobs on the reviews and engaging the industry and the public sector through the hearings they conduct. As you know, the BE sector codes, they are now operational. Unfortunately, we don't have any assessment report. The report we received in March is still about 22 codes because the new codes assessment will come from the April going forward in terms of what's agreed. the Broadband Advisory Council, Honorable Suella, not Chief, because I know you're interested in this, we're really looking at reviving it. Seriously. We are going to revive it for two main reasons. The reason why it has not been functioning, we engaged with the professor who was leading it before to say, let's try and change and refocus this mandate. That was the last engagement we had with the professor. The key things where they're going to assist us, of course, is still going to be on issues of deployment, but more importantly, we need the body of knowledge around this Fourth Industrial Revolution, because it's also related to this problem issue. So they are critical. We'll revive them. We don't have much money. Our budget is very small, 1 million to 2 million for all these things, but they need more. But some of them, like the BE Council, we suppose the co-funding with the industry. But I'm sad to hear that it's only my department which is funding at the moment. The industry has not put a cent, and we're appealing to them to start really funding them because that's their commitment in terms of BEX. So I thought I should just raise those things that we may not have all the money, but the strategies and partnerships we have put in place, they help us to push the implementation. we'll speak extensively tomorrow about this partnership we announced with WEF. It's a good partnership in Devon. It's a good partnership. I'm very positive about it. Our companies are upbeat. The international donors are upbeat on this Internet for All project, which we have. So it's not only the budget we get, but it's the strategic partnerships you leverage on, we should assist you to implement your policy faster. DG will deal with this, the dividend fund. and the two regulators. Yes, that's what the policy is proposing. It was extensive discussions and engagement that we have to come to this conclusion. Firstly, the economic regulator of the ICT sector is like any other economic regulator. We've got economic regulator in the transport, in the energy, and all these networks. But with the ICT, because of the rapidness of the changes, we need a fully fledged, fully resourced, both human and financial regulator to deal with these fast and rapid changes so that they can be ahead of the industry. That's the thinking behind this first regulator. Then there is a second component of regulation which deals with content issues and freedom of expression issues. And those are the things which are enshrined in our constitution to ensure independence. Whether you're talking about the content in terms of broadcasters, but also there's content in terms of publications, like films and publications, that all those content issues should be combined in one regulator. We consulted extensively within government and with the Department of Communications on that matter. So those are the regulators which I envisage, but in our sector we need a well-capacitated and a very responsive regulator, particularly in the face of rapid changes we are facing and coming with the industrial revolution. Comrade Dongen, thanks for your questions too. I think they can deal with it, but it was about legislation, if I'm correct. When is the legislation? I think I've touched on it a bit, but we take your take because it's important for us to indicate to the members when should they expect legislation. But as soon as we finalize this implementation plan, we'll engage, even informally, before we finalize the draft legislation, the members on the priorities, so that we can also take into account your views. And lastly, Shay, it's about trust. I think the officials can deal at length with that. There's an extensive chapter on the trust. But on the SME, yes, UDG 9, Ufage, everything was Tinyang. But it's important what he raised, because yes, I was in that meeting. The issue of enterprise development within our sector is critical, particularly the small enterprises, that they should be supported. That's why we have got this strategy paper which is out there for public comment. It was on the sideline of West Durban where the department and have arranged interaction with the SMME. I was happy that our operators were there. And I'm happy also that they said they're going to take those issues into account. There were senior people from Telkom, Vodacom, MTN, and Cell C. And some of them are here with me today. I've seen some of them here. But what was said there, Honorable Shepherdson, you like to call yourself acting, just take you as a shepherd. the issue was raised, for instance, there were many issues. I'll just give one example. I think there were two or three entrepreneurs who were there. They showed us this gadget. So this one is my gadget. And they mentioned they've gone through the international standards testing and comparison. And they were claiming that some of their gadgets are better than these gadgets you carry in your pocket, the latest ones. They were saying some of their gadgets, in terms of cost, they are almost 47% cheaper than these gadgets you carry in your phone with branded, big brands. Their main complaint was that when they want just to display their gadgets in the shops with their prices, they are not given that opportunity. So they spend a lot of time with research and development, but they are just not given an opportunity for displaying because they don't have big marketing budgets like the global big companies. That's all what they're asking. They were not asking for the replacements of those brands from big companies. They were just asking for inclusion of their brands. And I'm happy that what I had there, I hope it will happen. The operators really, they were saying they'll interact with these innovators, South African companies, to make sure that they are also included. yes, of course, marketing plays a big role in your brand becoming a big brand. But as I said, after we have joined this Smart Africa initiative, we're very clear why cabinet said we must join it. Because we want to contribute to the digitalization of Africa. But our main focus will be on skills development because each country chooses where they're going to focus on. But we can do all the things. And the second one is that one of localization of gadgets. As a country, our market is small. But as a continent, or even those countries now, over 20 countries participating in Smart Africa, our market is big. So that's where we also see the entry through localization. But even those which are manufactured originally from here, that they'll have access to the market. The Smart Africa initiative is trying to create one digital market in Africa through harmonization and cooperation. So those are the things really, Honorable Chair, I think, but we are still going to listen to further inputs on our SMME, ICT SMME strategy, which is up there for consultation, but we take your concern. I'll then hand over to DG to deal with some of the additional technical issues.
Thank you, Minister. Thank you, Chairperson and members. I'll start with the one on the schools, content at schools. What we're doing now, we'll start with the implementation of SA Connect. So what's going to happen in SA Connect implementation, out of the 40,000 or so sites that we're going to be connecting, majority of them are schools. So we will focus on what we do. We will be engaging with the Department of Education now that we are clearer on a roadmap, so that they can deal with content issues. And one of the issues that we'll have to raise is around the illiteracy, including the treatment of social media and related platforms. So that's what we are going to do. But our main focus will be on connectivity and infrastructure.
Just to add on that, DG, as you may know, members, the President launched the ICT and Education Operation Package. And we are part of that. I was on the network. But the Department of Education has done quite a lot of work already on digitization of the content. It's just the lack of devices now and maybe connectivity which we are dealing with. I thought I should just add that. And the Deputy Minister of Education is very enthusiastic. We interact with him quite frequently on this project. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Minister. Then moving on the issue of data expiry, colleagues will give more details. It's also unfortunate that ICASA does not come to this committee because they should also explain in detail. But safe to say that we see this as just part of a lot of work that still needs to be done on the regulation of data and broadband. And to that effect, the minister has even issued a policy direction to ICASA to go even beyond the issue of transparency in mechanisms. But colleagues will go to specific matters in terms of how we have engaged with ICASA. Now, on the post office failing to get government business,
the reality of the situation, particularly in the last 2 years, is that the post office has had to bid with companies, compete with other companies for these opportunities. Fair enough, it was stated that that is an intention of government to give post office business. But in line with the PFMA, all government entities have gone on tender, and the post office up to now has lost quite a number of businesses that they were supposed to compete with. And when we amend the Post Office Act, we'll also deal with that issue, because it goes back to the mandate of the post office. What is it? What does it exist to do? Surely it can no longer exist to just send letters. We need to expand the mandate of the post office. And if that is done by legislation, then it will allow the post office to do exactly that it's supposed to do in law. But if it is not in the substantive law of the post office, then it has to be like any other business. So we'll come back to yourselves to raise the issues around the future of the post office. What are we going to do with this entity going forward? On the legislative changes related to USASA and the sector regulator, we envisage two separate laws. One will deal with the Digital Development Fund, and the other will deal with the regulator. So there will be separate laws that will be coming to Parliament. The Minister has dealt with the issues around consultation on the wholesale open access network. And in some way, consultation will continue whether you do legislative changes or issue a policy direction. So even at the level of implementation, we envisage that there will be a degree of consultation, and that is inevitable. And that's how government has worked since the advent of democracy on this issue. On the Mexico issue in passing, we do have our own internal report in terms of, for the purposes of working of the department. So we know what is happening in Mexico, what they are grappling with. And as the minister indicated, we work on the different legal contexts. There will be some areas of learning, but in some areas you find that things are even different at the legal level. So you can't just compare apples and oranges all the time. Now, on the investors, what is the expected cost of the wholesale open access network? We indicated earlier on that this is not a state-owned enterprise. Now, if we're establishing a state-owned enterprise, we'll normally do a business case that will go through cabinet and all those approval processes. But the ones who are going to be operating this network are the ones who are specialists who must put together a business case, because they are the ones who are going to run this network. So government can't impose on industry to say, this is how you must plan the network. Meanwhile, it's going to be an industry network. Our focus is the kind of regulatory regime that is required to enable this network to be created and to function. The role of the VFIs, we do not know at this stage whether they will be interested. I guess we should be able to encourage them, if they are interested, to form part of this. They do so in other industries and participate. The rapid deployment question was on whether this is not in the APP. It is there in some way, in that in the legislative amendment, we can deal with this. But then there is an agency. And what we're beginning to do in our engagement with industry is whether, while looking at the long-term legislative instrument, we can't be conceiving of something that we can do in the meantime, because the law in its current form already allows us to do this. So we can run this process in parallel. On the calculation of the contribution to the Digital Development Fund, whether it won't bankrupt the industry, what we normally do in the calculation of this, and this is the current approach that ICASA is using, so this is not a new issue. Industry is already contributing to the Universal Service Fund currently. Now, what you will normally do, you will always minus the cost of providing a service and only determine that figure based on the profit after you have removed the cost of sales. So you take into consideration the cost of sales, and that is the model that has worked in South Africa currently in terms of dealing with the calculation of the contribution. How will the department ensure the implementation of the white paper with limited resources? A big question. When we presented our APP, we then answered a question on whether we'll get consultants to do that. We are doing a lot of work on our own with the limited resources to do the drafting. So the bulk of the drafting is being done internally so that even when we outsource, that which you outsource should be less than, excuse me, what you outsource should be less than what you do internally, so that most of the work is done by the department. And we find ways when we work on the new structure on how to increase capacity in the areas that are involved in the implementation of the white paper. We've indicated the issues of the success of USASA were dealt with even when USASA presented the APP, so I will not go into detail there. But safe to say that in terms of the changes that I envisage, USASA will be more of a fund and it will play a much bigger role beyond just infrastructure support and look also at the demand side issues. How will the minister ensure the transition to the new framework? There are issues that we are beginning to identify that can be done even without legislative changes, and we will itemize that when we discuss implementation. Maybe one day we'll indicate which issues require legislative changes and which issues can be implemented without legislative changes. Colleagues can go into details around cybersecurity. Safe to say that the most important challenge now is awareness creation. We saw it last week where there was talk about a global worm spreading across the world. Within government, we already have mechanisms to talk to other government departments in terms of monitoring what is actually happening. The big challenge that we will need to grapple with is how then to involve the citizenry in this exercise. So within government, Chairperson, can assure you that there is effective communication when those kind of things arise. And lastly, the minister has dealt with the issue of SMMEs. And colleagues can just deal with two issues.
Maybe the issue of CASA regulations and the cost, current ones. And the other one, maybe elaborate on the cyber security, hard fighting, and awareness. Those are the only two remaining.
Thank you, Minister. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, and thank you, Honourable Members. I think when we attended the two-day hearing on parliamentary hearings on cost to communicate last year, there were several representations made by stakeholders who were lamenting the fact that on the issue of data disappearance, that by data, especially for prepaid customers, that they pay to buy this data and this data simply disappears, but they don't know where it disappears to. And this was impacting negatively, particularly on vulnerable segments of our society, such as students who need this data to access study material, for example, to be online. To be engaged with their studying study material, and I think we just need to maybe juxtapose that with the report that ICASA has released in March this year on where they track and trace, you know, issues of employment, of revenues, and procurement spend on black enterprises and so on. And that report shows that mobile data traffic increased by 55% during the period in 2016 vis-a-vis 2015. So there's 189,000 data traffic. They measure that in minutes as opposed to, and that was in 2015. And in 2016, that grew to 292,000. That's a significant increase, over 55%. During the same period, mobile data revenue went up from 30 billion rand in 2015 to 38 billion rand in 2016. Right. So that's very huge. But what we've been able to do is that following these parliamentary engagements, parliamentary hearings, both the ICASA as well as the National Consumer Protection have established a task team comprising representatives of both authorities, and their task is really to investigate business rules relating to expiry of unused data and also the high cost of out-of-bundle data tariffs relative to in-bundle data tariffs, because those out-of-bundle tariffs, they're is what majority of consumers spend on. Those are the prepaid tariffs. So the task team has been meeting, and we're informed by the authority that they will be holding industry workshops with mobile operators this month. Following that engagement with mobile, and I think we're informed that also the workshop is precisely to explore mechanisms or possible solutions that can arise, that they can put together, either using instruments in the ECA or the instruments available to the National Consumer Consumer Commission via the National Consumer Protection Act. So after following that meeting of the stakeholders of industry workshop with mobile operators between the NCC as well as ICASA, they will provide a report to the department and the minister, and we will be reporting back to the committee regarding that issue of the disappearance of data. So that's where we are at. Thank you.
Okay. Cyber security one. Okay. On the cyber security app, it is currently operational, and the way it is operating is already linked to the banking system. So we do communicate with the banking system. We link to the cyber security response committee. We are actively involved in those processes. Now, what is missing that we need to send to the minister is the industry, which is the carrier, the platform, to have their own kind of a response mechanism. So that is not in place currently. We also have the National Cyber Security Advisory Council, which advises the minister in terms of relevant issues related to cyber security. So in short, we have that the challenges indicated would be more awareness to the citizens, which we'll attend to.
And in conclusion, sir, from what the officials later just said, I'm not making conclusions. If the traffic increase, your revenue increase, but the price still remain the same, you can make your own conclusion whether there's competition or no competition in the segment. But we'll formally wait the relevant authorities to come with information, because we can't have your traffic increasing, your revenue is increasing, but the cost remains the same. That's a short and long and short of it. Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Minister, and officials for the responses. I'm not sure if members would like to have follow-up questions, and I think the second round will be very brief, because just a follow-up on the questions and the answers as well. But I think what we'll see has information that we don't have, and we are reluctant to share it with us. You know, we've been asking this question to the minister, you know, consistently, so we become curious if there's anything that we need to know that you do not want to share with us. I think we can express your freedom of expression and share with us. Can we get a follow-up question, member? Honourable Sheen, we had an apology, Honourable Kile. Okay. Only Honourable Sheen. Okay.
Yes, thank you. In response to the trip to Mexico, my question was, what impact your findings in Mexico had on his department's approach to the South Africa's proposed National Wireless Open Access Network? Didn't say what influence did it have on policy, okay? Because policy was done. What did you learn that has impacted or has informed your approach to the network, okay? So that is, I just want to correct that. You said here that the mobile operators were very excited about something. Can you please tell us what it is they're excited about? Because when we had a brief engagement, I think it was in March, after they had their meeting in February where they presented some proposals to you on the network, you were adamant that there would be no concessions on spectrum. And my understanding was that the mobile operators had said if they didn't get spectrum, there was no buy-in from them onto the network. Can you tell me what has changed for them to be so excited? I'm really keen to hear that. And just one thing. You have said this before, Minister, so I'm just going to now make a remark that I perhaps should have made some months ago about the funding of the BEE Council. You're saying, you know, government is the only one coming to the party here with money. Tell me, where is government getting this money from? Is it coming out of your own pockets, your department's savings funds, pension funds? Where do you get this money to be so generous with, which you're now expecting the sector to come in as well? You're already playing with taxpayers' money, and now you want the taxpayers to add some more. You know, so I'm just remarking that you're making it sound like you're being tremendously generous. Actually, it's just taxpayers' money you're working with. So please, let's just stop this. We're the only ones contributing to this. Where's the private sector? They've already contributed to it. Then the gadgets that you're talking about from these entrepreneurs, these startups for the manufacturing of the handsets. Just one question that would come to me, and obviously I don't know what these are, but have these gadgets been SABS and ICASA approved?
Thank you. I also have one question here, Minister. I think in your previous deployment, you'll be able to assist. And you also have people with the legal expertise in your team. You know, the presentation is quite empowering. But there are areas that are creating more confusion to us who are not, you know, good within the legal environment. That we embrace the innovation, it shows that the industry is not stagnant, there's growth, there's improvement. And but it seems this innovation doesn't know when and where to stop. You know, when you check the, I have my constitution here, the right to privacy. Everyone has the right to privacy, which includes the right not to have the privacy of their communication infringed. We also have the right not to be treated or punished in a cruel, inhuman, or degrading way. You know, it's like this, I'm not sure it's a joke or something that is in social media about Mugabe, saying we have, you know, many rich criminals versus many poor, educated people. So improve this side, but it has, you know, some intention that are defeating the good purpose of this ICT growth. If we can assist in that one, where does it really stop this innovation? Thank you.
Thank you, honorable members. thanks for clarifying, Ms. Honorable Shin. You can only answer a question the way you read it, because our reading was giving implication that we went to Mexico and it influenced us on the policy. The policy is there. It's not going to change, as DGS said. We are now looking at implementing it, because it is important to be certain about the policy. The certainty is more important to the investors than not clarifying and implementing it, because that's what will bring certainty. like I said, there's no formal report in Mexico. Each one was taking notes. We have not combined these notes into composite formal report and tabling to cabinet, because it was not the main purpose. We normally obliged to table reports to cabinets on the main purpose of the visit to the presidency. As I said, we are very fortunate to interact with government, with their senior officials, and their regulator, because they work closely, and the operator on the operation of called RED in... Is it called RED in tandem? Compartit, yeah. That's their open access network. Like I've said, I'm telling you.
Don't drink the word.
Are you giving me the list again? I know you did, because I found a question. What did you learn?
Did
you have your sick high implement?
No. No, I don't know. Because it looked like there's a certain way you want me to answer your question, and I can't predict what's in your mind, unfortunately. If I could, if I was a super sangoma, I was going to just be straight on to your question. What we have said, Ms. Shin, once we have learned that their open access network is working, and they've got more access to rural areas, yeah, really, that's what they told us. I can only tell what they told us. I didn't go and test it myself because we trust other governments. We've got no reason to doubt that the information they give us. They give us a lot of documents which we look at, and that's our impressions of it, that it is working. The price, because this thing was started around late 2014, the prices, there's been no major reviews, but the initial reviews by independent people that the access is extending, the prices are coming down. That's all what I can say. Yes, as you know, Mexico is leading in OICD. They also are being assisted by OICD in terms of doing their own research and implementation. That's all what I can tell on the Mexico thing. The mobile operators are excited. Yes, the stakeholders, including the mobile operators, are excited about the policy. You asked what they're excited about. Yes, they're excited. They welcome the policy, almost every aspect of it. The only challenge we're engaging on was on the implementation of one and the spectrum issues. There are two issues in the spectrum. The first one, the policy talks about the return of the high-demand spectrum. And they're excited that we're engaging on this because we have to create certainty to their current investment, although spectrum is licensed on an annual basis. The second component was that their network are congested. And they were appealing for some spectrum, and that's what we're engaging on. And we'll be able tomorrow to give you the details because we're just waiting the final responses from them. So there is an excitement. They are also excited about the rapid deployment policy. And they are saying we must try and move with speed together on this. But we have to get these committees at a national level. And we cannot form those committees until we present the implementation plan in cabinet. That's why we are trying to push the implementation plan that it should be finalized soonest. So those are the exciting parts of it because, as you know, Honorable Shin, the cost of laying the infrastructure contributes quite significantly to the cost of the operators and the costs which are then passed to us. That's why I'll be very happy, as honorable members, if you can spread the message to the private owners, to the public owners, like municipalities, that they must not see operators as something to just drain the money because they think they are rich. We can kill them if we do it, continue to do so. Even at the ITU, they always raise this thing. Let's not see the operators as a milking cow. Even in Texas. But in terms of the infrastructure, I'm happy the consultations we had with SALCA and the municipality, there's a general understanding that they should treat these things as developmental aspects. They bring development in their municipalities rather than just keep on charging them from these way leaves. And I think the same to the private owners of land. Once we have those regulations, then it will be applicable to all of them. So, but the process is the implementation plan, then we can put all those structures in place soonest. And those can be done in this financial year. There's no need to wait for further legislation. Yes, legislation will be to put attention to, because some people may be fine and start challenging us in court. But the engagement is helping us in that. The ICTB Sector Council. I'm trying to understand. I don't want to answer you wrong. You say, where is this money? Is this my personal money? It's not.
Taxpayers' money.
It's a government's money.
Taxpayers'
money. You're a taxpayer, but once in government, it becomes government money. Once you paid your taxes, it becomes government money. It's South African, it's people of South Africa money. The BEE Act, which is run by National Treasury, no, the DTI, specify, and our own industries agreed that they'll pay half and we'll pay half. But all what we're saying is only government who is paying now. Yes, the industry are saying they would like to see this thing working first before and putting system before they throw their money. But why should it be only us who are taking the risk and funding this thing alone when there's agreement that all of us must fund it? You must remember the BEE Sector Council is not government sector council. There are many representatives of the industry. Almost half of them, they are industry representatives from industry. Only two by government. The rest are from other stakeholders like disability, workers, and so on. So it's not a government thing. It is our thing. So we should all fund it as agreed and in terms of the list. Oh, sorry. It's our entity. The gadgets, whether I've certified myself that they are registered with the CASA and SAPS, no. As I said, these issues are raised in an open forum. Unfortunately, I didn't see to get all the documentation, but they were just engaging our industry. But my sense, the mere fact that they even went to international grading and compliance, I'll assume that they've done some of those basic things. But the key thing about our SMMEs, it is our responsibility as a collective to assist them. You see, it is our responsibility to assist them because we are trying to remove all these other burdens which are put on them and lessen them so that they can also enter into the market. I'm excited about them because they are innovators. They are bright, young South African, black and white. They are the innovators. They are the one who are going to take us to this revolution. So they need all our support and industry. But as I have said, I was very happy that our industry was responding positively to them. I didn't see a single operator who was uttering a bad word to them. They were embracing them. it dealt with privacy issues. The DG wants to start with that, and I'll end.
Thank you, Chair. So that does raise a very interesting question. That is these balancing of rights and constitutional issues and how it pans out on this internet and this electronic environment and what do we do about that over the long run. And it's a very complex question that no one can profess to have all the answers, but it's something we have to embrace and continue to deal with. Typically, the online legislation that we deal with can't cater for all kinds of behaviors and all kinds of criminal activity. So you have, in the various sectors, you have specific laws. So you have laws on protection of personal information, on defamation, on hate speech, and the laws dealing with the various crimes in our country. But in that context, for example, the Department of Justice is currently dealing with the cybersecurity legislation. So, and that bill then tries to pull together various role players in that environment and also strengthen the regulation of crimes as it relates to the online environment. So it's a very modern law that's on our doorstep to deal with all the various developments in the crime space. And then there's also the Films and Publications Board, for example, that are also keeping up with times and updating their legislation to ensure that they bring in the online effects on films and publications and classification thereof and some self-regulatory mechanisms. We've heard the Minister and DG speak about the content regulation that will be strengthened under the auspices of the DOC, and that is currently being considered. From our department's perspective, the white paper also deals with it under the digital society chapter, more so in the digital access pillar, where the promotion of trust and security is dealt with, and that also links to the question asked by the Honourable Member about trust issues. So typically the white paper says that we should empower users to protect themselves, do more awareness campaigns. We must strengthen the electronic signature framework that's currently in the ECT Act, and build upon that to better the authentication mechanisms and keep up with international developments. And that certainly is one of the things we are doing further research on to come up with an appropriate model. There's the regulation that must be strengthened by the sector regulator on security and trust, which isn't a space they've done or were mandated to do much about to date, and we need to change that. We need to look at the citizens and what are their needs, ultimately, to develop a list of basic skills that citizens need to participate, plans to address these, support and training at public access sites like post offices, Chair, integration of digital skills in formal, primary, secondary and tertiary institutions, again linked to the other question we heard about the curricula. The fact is government, and translating that then to the implementation plan and especially the legislative development phase, we then have to bring amendments to deal with some of these issues, the electronic signature provisions, sufficient mechanisms for the protection of children, sufficient protection regarding privacy concerns relating to clandestine digital data trail tracking and potential unauthorized personal data storage, and then lastly, enabling citizens to remove information from the internet that unfairly stigmatizes them. So those are new progressive policy content in our white paper that directly links to the Honourable Chair's question, and also our contribution as part of this whole of government approach that's ultimately needed to continue managing and regulating matters affecting the online environment. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Ralph. maybe just to stretch, thank you for clarifying this. Lastly, your question. I think it was about innovation and how far you can stretch. There's another element of it too. I'm not sure whether we talk about it. We are also partnering and funding the University of Pretoria, the ethics division. And they are doing quite a good work, to be honest. So recently they had a conference for Africa where they invited regulators and other key academics from Africa to deal with this question. Because as we go to this revolution, there are key ethical issues which are coming. I'm not just talking about the bad things people put on the media. Last year, I was very happy when we had this state of increase in xenophobic incidences at the beginning of last year, that the industry, we came with the industry, and they also agreed to some element of self-regulation. And that's what the revolution is calling for, some self-regulation and areas of co-regulation and self-regulation, where they themselves were agreeing to take out some of the hate content which was in their network. I'm very happy. I was very happy because that was a practical effect by our own industry in terms of curbing the hate thing. But in terms of what I was saying about the University of Pretoria, they are doing a lot of work also in terms of awareness, targeting schools, targeting academics, doing quite a lot of, they produce a lot of material in terms of books which they publish. And it may be better for the members to read some of those books. One of the key elements, the challenge they are trying to deal with in this new revolution, there are new ethical issues like who benefits from this revolution. Those who succeed, they become super rich, not just rich. And those who fail, they remain absolutely poor. So that's one aspect of the ethical dilemma of this revolution we have to try and deal with as society. This fusion of physical, technological, and physical matter, it also puts certain dimensions of ethics. What do we do with the super soldier we're creating in Honorable Goranov, CFO called soldier, through manipulation of his brain cells and neuron transmission?
Are you giving away a state secret here, man?
No, it's an ethical issue which is coming out of the fourth industrial revolution. And now we're developing these supercomputers and super processing. And these things, they tend to also... what do we do the day when they become cleverer than us? Because they create things on their own. So those are the ethical issues, Shepherdson, would like to add to that part. And we really like maybe, when you have got time, to invite these professors and researchers who are dealing with these ethical issues which I mentioned. They are a reality. It's not only jokes. But on the whole, as I've said, Shepherdson, that the benefits are so enormous. We are not going to be restrained by the things we can solve as human beings. The benefits of this internet and this revolution are enormous. We will continue to embrace and make sure that each and every citizen have access to internet. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. The committee would like to appreciate the interaction between us and the department and all the answers that were given to the questions raised and concerns. And moving forward, I think there will be a follow-up in terms of questions for oral or written reply in the House. The interaction doesn't end up here. We're still going back to reread the document and revise it. And, we are managing time. Time is also managing us because we can't go further. That's why we interact, but we still have questions for further engagement. And the committee would like to ask the department to provide feedback regularly in terms of progress made, especially on beneficiation as articulated in the paper. And the court of communication remains a song. We shall sing and sing and sing until kingdom comes. We are appealing to mobile provider operators to come to the party. You'll still make profit. We're also trying to nurture the situation whereby we don't tamper with your profit, but we still have a duty to make sure that the poor people do benefit as well. If we say they must have access, and on the other hand, we do not take a responsibility in terms of the affordability for them to access the gadgets or the ICT in whatever way, we are really running a vicious circle whereby we are just looking to ourselves, those who can afford, at the expense of the poor. But all in all, we thank all those who made time to come here and share with us the information and the knowledge. We are empowered by your presentation. And other questions that were asked by members, they're really empowering, not just a question or maybe a concern raised by a member. I think we have come to the end of the business of the day, and we thank you very much. Thank you. What else? Sorry, Mr. Siabonga. Okay. For members, we still have minutes to adopt. Yes. Thank you very much. Okay.
What changes you mean? Okay, that was not for changing. What did she add? I don't see.
Why don't you just move the way we want to send you?